Okay, good evening, everybody. Hi, thank you for coming. You know, at least for the women, Pesach cleaning is quite arduous, and I guess some of the men do it also. But, I wanted to not finish, because it's really not possible to finish, but just to continue a little bit, some discussions about electricity. Again, just to review, the fundamental divide here are between machshirim, between appliances in which there's some filament that turns red hot or glows, according to most opinions, not all, but according to most opinions, that is a molacha da'oraisa of havara, of creating a fire, because through the process of heat energy, it turns into glow, so there's light and heat, and therefore that is fire. According to the Ravid, it's a little different. The Ravid actually says when you heat up metal until it glows, it may be considered to be cooking metal, because cooking is lapped off of food. But that depends. That depends on what your purpose is. If your purpose is to soften the metal, that would be bishul. But it seems in the filament, you're not into softening it that much. It would be havara. It would be burning. So that's, we'll put that to the side. And that, generally speaking, would not apply to LEDs and the like, which are not heat-generated lights, right? Now, any non-heat-generated light or any appliance that does not have light, like a fan or whatever it is where there are no lights, so then we have different shitos as to what is the iser. The most common approach is that of the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak, a 19th century Galitzianer Paisek, who says that the iser of, this was shortly after electricity became commercially available, that this is an iser derabbanan called molid. Molid is a generic iser to create something new. Now the Gemara does not talk about molid zerem, creating current, but the Gemara does talk about molid reyach. You're not allowed, for example, to put perfume on clothing because you're creating a new reyach, and creating something new is similar to the concept of malacha. So the Beis Yitzchak generalizes from molid reyach that there's an iser of molid, and therefore creating current is molid zerem. That's a drabana. The Chazenish is the famous shita that is very much machmir. The Chazenish says that turning on any electrical appliance is a form of bona. It is building. Why is it building? So the Chazon Ish says, building is not simply when you connect different pieces to make a structure, but it's when you take that which is inert, that which is dead, that which is non-functional, and you convert it into a functional entity. The Chazon Ish called that bona. Now, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, again, by way of review, wrote a sefer as a young man in which he strongly did not accept the Chazon Ish's view, because Orbach said, well, wait a second here. I understand if you took something broken and you fixed it, perhaps we could call that bona or makeh bepatish, making a kli. But here you have a ready-made appliance. It's made to be turned on and off, and therefore you really would not regard turning it on as an act of construction. You would regard it as an act of use. Using something is not the same as making something. But nevertheless, the Chazon Ish's lashon was, mahapech mimavas l'chayim. You're turning it from dead to alive. That's a form of bona. Now, one point I made last week that's very, very interesting, and that is, what would the problem be in shutting off an appliance? Like the Chazon Ish, we have symmetry. Because just as there's a malacha called bona, there's also a malacha called soser. So if closing the circuit is called bona, opening the circuit is called destroying. That's fine. But like the Beis Yitzchak, if the iser of turning on is molid zerem, creating a current, and that's usher derabbanan because it's forbidden to create something new, rabbinically, only rabbinically, according to this, then there is actually nothing wrong, theoretically, under this theory, in shutting it off, because all you're doing is removing the hischatshus. Now, I want to go back that although Rav Orbach comes out, very strange, I mean, or Shlomo Zalman ultimately comes out, that there really is not a solid basis to answer any non-heat, light, electric appliances, but it's already become a minhag, and at least l'chumra, he is often choshesh for the Chazon Ish, even though he strongly disagreed, but he said, kvar ho-rezokein, the Chazon Ish, who was the Gadol Hador, had such a psak, and therefore Rav Orbach said we should try to be choshesh for it. Now I want to point out, there is a fundamental ambiguity in the Chazon Ish. And let me explain what this is. And it was actually touched upon after the shiur. The Chazon Ish says that turning on an electrical appliance is the malacha of bona. It's an isur d'oraisa, even if there's no light, even if there's no havora. Is the bona the completion of the circuits? Or is the bona the functionality of the appliance? In other words, the issue would be this. Let's say the appliance is already on, and you're raising, you know, you're turning it to a higher. Now, it depends what happens here, because, I'm really not an engineer, so I apologize for my ignorance. But depending on the appliance, depending on the age, depending on the make, different things can happen. Sometimes you simply have a more powerful current flowing through the same wires and the same circuitry. It would appear that according to the Chazon Ish, there's no reason why that should be usher, nor should it be usher like the Beis Yitzchak. You're neither creating a new current, nor are you bona. Okay. But sometimes what happens is, and this is what Dr. Steiner mentioned last week, sometimes what happens is that as you switch a setting, what happens is some circuits, you know, open up and new circuits are created in which the stronger current is directed. And therefore, some have said that according to the Chazon Ish, that would still be an Isser D'Oraisa, because even though the appliance is already on, but the act of creating a new circuit, a new avenue of flow, would be considered to be an act of bona. So as a result, this would have a lot of repercussions regarding raising and the like. In fact, on Yom Tov, it would be very relevant as well, because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to take fire from an existing source, you can't create new fire, and bona would be usher as well. But the ambiguity is this. It is not so clear to me that it is the creation of a new circuit that the Chazon Ish regards as being bona. It may be, again, I'm not saying this for sure because many disagree with this, it may be that the Chazon Ish considers the functionality of the kli to be the act of bona. So it may be a matter of indifference if the current is going in this wire or the current is going in this wire. Once the thing is on, once you have been mahapech, to use the Chazon Ish's language, mimavas l'chayim, the closing and opening of individual circuits may not be the bona. In other words, this is the question that one needs to ponder. L'maisa poskim or machmer. I mean, the bottom line is poskim do treat opening and closing of individual circuits as bona, like the Chazon Ish. But it's not at all clear to me that is the case if the appliance is already working. So the bottom line here is this. Turning something on, if it has a light, a heat-generated light, havara, if it doesn't have a heat-generated light, either there's no light or it's LED, so the Beis Yitzchak would call it molid zerem, the Chazon Ish would call it bona, Rav Orbach actually says it should be usher only mitam minag, but we're chayshish for the Chazon Ish, turning it off, like the Beis Yitzchak, it's hard to see why it would be usher at all, but like the Chazon Ish, it would be usher because of soser, raising or lowering currents, so it depends, if no new circuits are being created, then l'chora there would be no usher at all, unless there's a light involved. If new circuits are being created, then it would depend. We are machmer. Again, obviously, we're not. I'm not telling you can do this, But in Lumdus, it would depend on how we understand what is the bona of the Chazon Ish. Is it the functionality of the utensil, or is it the opening and closing of individual circuits? Right. So Lemaisa, as Reb Orbach said, as Shlomo Zalman said, the Minag Yisrael is perhaps much, much stricter than the strict halacha would be. But nevertheless, you know, you can't disparage a minhag. I mean, even, I'll give you another example. I'll give you a low-tech example. An umbrella on Shabbos. Certainly if it was open before Shabbos. Right? The umbrella was open before Shabbos. And even if, alibi diemes, you didn't open it on Shabbos. I mean, it wasn't open. And I want to open an umbrella on Shabbos. So we learn, anyone that's Shomer Shabbos kind of learns, you know, hey, you don't touch that umbrella on Shabbos, and even if it's open before Shabbos, and certainly you can't open it on Shabbos, and the answer that everybody will give you always is that there's a prohibition. It's also bona, it's low-tech bona. You're not allowed to make a tent. And an umbrella is a tent, it protects you from the rain.
And you're
not
allowed to take an umbrella on Shabbos?
No, okay. I was using an example that I thought everybody knew. No, you are not allowed to take an umbrella on Shabbos. That's what I'm saying. And the reason that's given... You cannot yet. The reason that's given is because it is the construction of a tent. If I open it, and even if I don't open it, the mere positioning of the umbrella over my head is constructing the tent, because I'm taking it and making a tent. But Alibi Diemes, the Noida Yehuda, the great Rav of Prague, 250 years ago, actually wrote that Me'ikar Hadin, Me'ikar, from the strict standpoint of halacha, it would not be usher, because the general rule is that once you have a roof, just like an example would be an awning, right? These like the awnings that cafes have, right? You know, you it just comes out. Now that also looks like making a tent, and yet the halacha is you can do that on Shabbos, because since it's already attached to the wall, so to put it back and forth is not called an act of construction. Same thing here with the umbrella. The roof of the umbrella, so to speak, is attached to its equivalent wall, which is the pole. But the Noda Yehuda, nevertheless, is very, very strong. Minhag Yisrael. It is a time-honored Minhag Yisrael. For hundreds of years, this was in the time of the Noda Yehuda already, that we don't take such things. And even if halacha doesn't have an absolute prohibitory justification, this is the minhag. But Shlomo Zalman says that, you know, electricity is kind of the same way. Plus, he's choshesh for the Chazon Ish l'chumra. There are a lot of things that sometimes one could do a whole study on. This. It's very complicated. How sometimes, all right, this is a case of a minhag that's stricter than the din, so that's not so much of a problem. But sometimes we have minhagim that seem to be going against the din, and yet we follow the minhag. Chocolate is a very good example for those who like chocolate. All of us make a bracha of shahakol on chocolate, and yet the logic of chocolate should generally be ho'edis, because it is from the cocoa bean, and although it's ground up and the like, but that is the way the cocoa bean is consumed, and therefore it should be berei pri ho'edis. It is recorded that from the time the Chassam Sofer was an 8-year-old child, he became aware, or he divined this halachic problem. So as a little child, he never had chocolate unless it was part of his hamotzi meal. But even then, I'm not sure if that's such a solution. Unless he was eating chocolate as the main course, I'm not sure that this was a satisfactory resolution, because he would still have the problem of what bracha do you make on chocolate. Maybe it was like Israelis, the chocolate spread. Maybe he had something like... something like that. So that's an example of, you know, minhagim. So again, there are minhagim. Now, we have to assume that these minhagim were started by Talmidei Chacham, and we're not just talking about some guy decided not to take an umbrella on Shabbos and that spread. We have to assume that there was rabbinic sanction for this. I see also another thing, which is really not a minhag, but it always struck me. You know, I know in the States, whenever communities build an Erev, they always, you know, they have a list of what you should not carry in the Erev, you know, can't carry mukts and the like. So it mentions no umbrellas, and it always mentions no pocketbooks. So I've always wondered, you know, what's wrong with a pocketbook? I mean, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with a pocketbook. You can have a pocketbook on Shabbos. But the problem is, you know, in the pocketbook, people have wallets and credit cards and money, you know, so it's kind of just something that the klal was makabel not to do those things because it could lead to other things, yeah.
Is that also like muksa midas?
To do what, a pocketbook?
Yeah, something like a muksa midas.
Well, it could be, but a pocketbook is a perfectly valid kli. I mean, you can put things in a pocketbook that are mudra on Shabbos. I mean,
not using the shlach on Shabbos on
Sukkah.
That's like also for tents.
No, so it depends. Yes, that is correct. But there it depends. The covering the sukkah with a cover. So it depends on a few things. If it is already unfolded, not the roll, but past the roll, only up to a tefach. Tefach is just the width of a hand. If it's partially covering the sechach before Shabbos, you are allowed to
drag
the rest of it out, because that is called a temporary tent, and a temporary tent you're not allowed to make, but you're allowed to extend. And the definition of an existing tent is one tefach, so once it's a tefach out, you are extending a temporary tent. On the other hand, if you have something fancier, like an awning that opens and closes, you can absolutely use that on Shabbos. You can use that on Shabbos, even if it's not covering any part of the tent, because opening and closing an attached awning is not considered making a new tent. So I remember I'm sure many other people have it too, but I remember the Basner Rebbe, Aleph HaShalom, in Zichrono Livracha, in Boston. He was the first person I became aware of in which he converted his dining room into a sukkah. That type of opening and closing the roof. That's maybe viewed as issue with an umbrella. He says an umbrella, even if you're opening it, is just like the awning. He says, what should the issue be? And yet, we have inconsistencies in Minhagya, meaning we matir the awning and we prohibit the umbrella, even though, it's the same principle, but whatever. Halacha is not, at least halacha as it develops, is not always rigorously consistent. It's an interesting question of why that should be, and I don't have an answer, but that is why in halacha it is very, very dangerous, unless one is a great, great posek, to be medame milsa la milsa, meaning you don't compare one thing to another, because something might be mutter, but that's not going to mean it's something similar is going to be mutter. So sometimes that's because you need to analyze them in lumdus, but sometimes even if in lumdus they are the same, in practice they may be treated differently. So those are two different layers of analysis and the like. In fact, that's part of why, just to give you, again, I don't want to be maarich in digressions, but that's part of why some of the greatest analytical thinkers, such as Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, didn't like to paskin. He didn't like to paskin because Rav Chaim, as a deep analytical thinker, was rigorously consistent in his premises. But he recognized that because halacha had so much influence through minhagim and the like, it was not always rigorously consistent. So so on one hand, he didn't want to paskin in a way that offended his sense of consistency, but he didn't want to depart from that either, so therefore he left it to his trusty Dayan, Rav Shlomo Zelig, to kind of work it out. Although I will tell you, the relatively few psukim we have from Rav Chaim are absolutely brilliant. So, I mean, he doesn't need me to say it, but he was an absolutely brilliant master of practical halacha, not just lumdus, because he brought lumdus to practical halacha. So, but he didn't like to do it, but very, very brilliant psukim. In fact, this all started, I'm not going to tell you the story because it's too complicated a story, but basically, he was at a chasna in Warsaw once, and he was speaking with Talmidim about lumdus, and there was a Pilesha Rav who was shaking his head and saying, ay, 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 when will you learn halacha? When will you know halacha? And he kept on saying this, and so finally Rav Chaim lost a little patience. So Rav Chaim said, you're right, let me ask you a shayla. So he asked him a practical shayla about meat and getting mixed up with other meat. And the person was giving these straight Shulchan Aruch answers, and Rav Chaim was showing him, well, that can't be. So the person changed his mind. Oh, you're right. So I'll say this. Rav Chaim said, what about this? He drove the Rav crazy. The Rav went back and forth and back and forth, because every source the Rav had, Rav Chaim showed him a different source and a different argument. And finally, Rav Chaim gave him an answer and says, that's how we learn halacha in Brisk. So, okay. All right. But be it as it may.
Just the pocketbook.
Yes.
A woman who I know told me she came from Krakow.
Yeah.
And they used to have a special pocketbook. Krakow had a wall.
A Shabbos pocketbook. Yeah.
It so happens she came to Brooklyn and she didn't know there was no such thing as an error. And the first Shabbos was there, she looked out with her pocketbook and a friend of hers.
Brookline doesn't have an air. I'm just.
Like 1960.
Oh, no, those days, yeah. Well, Nebuch, but that has nothing to do with the pocketbook. In other words, what I'm saying is that even when they have an air, they tell people don't carry pocketbooks. Yeah.
People did.
Yeah.
Not until the
80s. Okay. All right. Very good. So when I was in Brookline, they didn't have an air. I don't even remember. Okay. All right. Okay. Anyway. Did you want to say?
No, let's go on.
Okay. All right. So now I just want to talk about a few things, and let's talk about refrigerators for a moment. Now I want to talk quickly about old time refrigerators, and then even more quickly about new time refrigerators. The old time refrigerator basic problem was light bulb turns on, got a problem, and the other problem is warm air comes in. It could activate, the thermostat could be activated, turning on the motor. Again, what malacha is involved in turning? All right, so turning on the light, if it's an old incandescent light bulb, is havara. That's your malacha. And turning on a motor, even if there are no lights, is either molid, zarum, or bone, right? So the question becomes, these are the two problems. Say again? Molid zerem. Zerem is just current. I don't remember if the Beis Yitzchak uses the word zerem. Zerem is more of a modern word. By the way, you do know that there are people, for good reason, it's very logical, they are very, very reluctant to use the word chashmal for electricity. Because what's chashmal is the divine radiance that surrounds Hashem's kisei hakavod in the Navi Yecheskel. So Eliezer ben Yehuda, who had no particular reverence for Tanakh, he just used it as a source of words, said, hey, sounds good, radiance, light, like electric bulb, looks like... So he took chashmal. So there are people, chashmal, using chashmal for that? What's that? So some poskim actually use the word electric. They use the anglicized word. Okay. But be it as it may, so let's take the first question is about the warm air. Are you causing, since you might be causing the motor to start earlier than it otherwise would, in order to cool up the food, is that called a gram? Is that causing either havara or molid zerem or bona? So here, this is a big, big machlokes. This is an old machlokes that goes back for many, many years. There are some poskim that say you're only allowed to, there are actually three views. Some poskim say you're only allowed to open a refrigerator when the motor is running, because then even though you're prolonging the running of the motor, you're not causing it to turn on, and therefore you'd have to wait until you hear the hum. There are other shitas that say you can open the refrigerator right away, because since it's a delayed action, a delayed effect, and you don't have intention, and it's not definite that something will be activated, we apply the rule of Dover Sheino Mitzchaven. So as between those two shitas, people do have different practices. Most people, I believe, do follow the leniency of opening a refrigerator anytime. Some people are machmer to wait until the motor starts running. There is a third view, however, which is even stricter, which not that many people follow, but some people do follow, in which they will not open a refrigerator unless it is on a Shabbos clock that totally shuts off the compressor and the motor for the particular times that you're going to open it. and therefore the air has no effect on the mechanism one way or the other. Because their view is that even when the motor is running, see, this is their analogy, even when the motor is running, you're not allowed to prolong. But now Rav Shlomo Zalman emphatically rejected that position. He said there is no aveira. See, their analogy is the following. Let's say you had a fire. If there's a fire burning, and I throw more fuel on the fire, right, even though I'm just continuing an existing fire, it's a davar pashut, that's a malacha d'oraisa. To add fuel to a fire, for sure is a malacha d'oraisa. So their argument is, if a motor is running, and without you opening the door, it would shut off in 5 minutes, and because you open the door, it'll shut off in 6 minutes, you have extended the activity of the motor for an extra minute. Their argument is, that's like throwing wood on the fire. But Rav Shlomo Zalman said, absolutely not. Adding fuel to the fire is contributing to the Maisa Havora. Here, you're not putting the current into the system. The system is already being activated. You're simply preventing it from being shut off. The analogy would be, if you had a candle, and the candle is next to a window, and the wind is going to blow it out, and you shut the window. Shutting the window is not adding fuel to the fire, you're just preventing the wind from extinguishing the fire. And Rav Shlomo Zalman was very, very emphatic that shutting a window on a burning candle under no definition can be construed as an act of havora. Let me just finish a little bit. Okay, so as I say, we have those three shitas regarding that. I think that at least for the old-fashioned refrigerator, the standard minhag is very few people are choshesh for number three to require a Shabbos clock. But some people only open when the motor is running. But l'maisa, it's a very widespread minhag to be mako even when the motor is not running. Now the light bulb, however, is a much more serious problem potentially, because for the light bulb, you're actually involving a potential issur d'oraisa in terms of an incandescent bulb, at least, going on, which is havora. So a number of issues need to be considered. First of all, let's say I don't remember if I disconnected the light. I don't remember. Now, you have to be honest with yourself. You can't pretend you don't remember. So, you know. Okay, because Hashem knows. But let's say I genuinely don't remember, and I have a reason to be in doubt. So, here's the argument. We have to analyze this based on something we talked about a few weeks ago. There is a principle in the laws of Shabbos that if I do something without intention to do a malacha, it is mutter. Right, so I could drag a bench across a dirt floor as long as I don't intend to make a furrow. That's called Dover She'eino Mitzchaven. But Dover She'eino Mitzchaven is not permitted when it's a psik resha, when it's a 100% certain consequence. In fact, that is why I can't open the refrigerator if I know the light's going to turn on. Because although I don't intend to turn on the light, but since I know it's going to happen, it's forbidden under the rule of psik resha. That's exactly why it's usher. So here's the question. If I don't know that it's going to turn on, so from my perspective, it's not a psik resha. So can I invoke the principle of davar she'eino mitzchaven? Now, of course, if I open it and it does turn on, I won't be able to close it, but at least can I open it? So this is a very interesting question. This is technically called a suffix psik resha, meaning if it's not unscrewed, it is a psik resha, it'll turn on, but because of your lack of knowledge, it's not a psik resha. So is that enough to make it a psik resha? Now there's maybe lack of psik resha is only if you know the facts and you know or you're aware that your pa'ula may not cause a malacha. Here, if you knew the facts, it would be a psik resha. You just don't know the facts. So this is a big machlokas, famous machlokas, between the Taz and Rebbe Kiva Eger about the following interesting situation. Let's say you're in a place like you're in Africa, mosquito-infested jungle or whatever it is, some places in Israel, you have all these flies flying around your bedroom, and you want to close a drawer. Now, if there are flies in the drawer, you're transgressing the prohibition of capturing, seder, tzad. And if you knew they were there, you would not be allowed to close the drawer, even though you don't intend to capture them, because that would be a psik resha. The Taz says, if you don't know if there are flies or not, the Taz calls that a davar sheino mischaven, and you're allowed to close the drawer. Rabbi Kiveger very much argues, if there are flies, it is a psik resha. The poskim seem to side with Rabbi Kiveger on this one, so if you're not sure, then you shouldn't open it up. Okay. All right. That's possibility number one. Now, possibility number two. If I know I didn't unscrew the bulb, I know. So I can't open it because of psik resha. Am I allowed to ask someone to open it up and not tell him? Meaning, can I ask a Jew? Because you could say, well, the Jew is doing no aveira at all because he literally doesn't know. So we possibly can't do that either, because that's lifnei iver. You're causing a Jew to do an inadvertent sin. That's going to be us. Okay. So I can't do it if I'm in doubt, and I certainly can't do it if I know. I can't ask a goy to do it. I'm sorry. Okay, I'll get to it. I can't ask another Jew to do it who doesn't know. I cannot ask a katan to do it, because I'm not allowed to have a katan do malacha for me. What about asking a goy? Can I ask a goy, if there is a guy around, to open the refrigerator if I know and he knows, everybody knows, the light is going to turn on? So here is the issue. The bottom line is, Rav Moshe says you can, but you may ask a guy, but the reasoning is a little complicated. It's not so straightforward. Let's go back to a basic principle. I am not allowed to ask a guy to do anything for me on Shabbos that is forbidden as a malacha, right? I can't. Now, it's not because the guy has a sin. The guy is allowed to violate Shabbos. In fact, the guy is not even allowed to keep Shabbos. But I cannot ask a guy to do malacha for me. I can't ask a guy to cook for me. I can't ask a guy to carry for me. I can't. There are heterim. Maybe we'll give some other shiurim on that. But unless there's a special category of heter, this is what Chazal call amira la'akum. Asking a guy, or telling a guy, or requesting a guy to do malacha is a shvus, is a rabbinic prohibition. So, given the fact that opening the refrigerator and the light will turn on may be the malacha of havara, am I not asking the guy to do a malacha? So how could I ask a guy to do a malacha for me? I can't do it. So here, Rav Moshe says the following idea. Rav Moshe says that although I cannot do malacha and I cannot ask a guy to do malacha, but the malacha that I can't ask a guy to do is not as comprehensive as the malacha I cannot do myself. And that is, Rav Moshe learns, again, he was not the first one that invented this. This is based on a Trumas Hadeshen that the Ramah brings. So this goes back to eminent authority, but Rav Moshe generalized it. That when you ask a goy to do something that's not a malacha, but as a consequence of the non-malacha activity, a malacha will be done that's only a psik resha, amira lenachri is permitted if the only thing that's going to happen is psik resha. In other words, you see the difference here. Why can I not open up the refrigerator? Even though I'm not intending for the light to go on, since it's a 100% consequence, it's forbidden for me to do something mutar if it's 100% certain that there'll be a malacha. That's the principle of psik resha. So on that we say no. For a goy, when I cannot tell a goy to do malacha for me, But if I tell a guy to do an activity which intrinsically is not a malacha, but the iser to me would only be it's a psik resha for a malacha, the Magen Avraham says that is not inclusive within the principle of amira lenachri. Therefore, I am permitted to tell a guy to open, I don't have to hint, we're not talking about hinting here, I can tell the guy, please open the refrigerator, I don't even have to offer him some cake, although I'll talk about where offering him cake would be relevant, please open the refrigerator for me, because this is a dover she'eino mischaven, that's a psik resha, and by the same token, he may close the refrigerator for the same reason, because although the extinguishing of the light could very well be the malacha of mechabeh, although it would be a kibud rabbanan, but whatever, it would be mechabeh, but once again, it's a davar she'eino mischaven, that's only usher for me as a psik resha. So for the guy to open and close is not a problem, because now again, when it comes to the guy unscrewing the bulb, you're going to see how you have to be so attuned to subtleties. Right, I didn't address that yet. I will address that in a minute. Right now, we're just talking about opening and closing. Yeah.
So that's in a situation when you're not sure, right?
Yeah.
You're not sure that you turned it off.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. I'm talking. No. The heter of telling a guy. No. It's even if you're sure it's on.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Even if it's a definitive secretion, it is permitted to tell a guy to do a permissible activity that has an inevitable consequence of a malacha.
But why is it permissible? I don't understand.
No, because the point is this. I cannot tell a guy to do a malacha. I cannot tell a guy cook. I cannot tell a guy carry. I cannot tell a guy to make a fire. I cannot tell a guy to extinguish a fire, unless it's pikuach nefesh. But here, what I actually asked the guy to do was an activity that in and of itself is a permissible activity, opening and closing a door. The only reason I can't do it is because of the principle of psik resha. So the Magen Avraham's chiddush is the principle of psik resha does not apply to the issue of telling a guy. By telling a guy, the only thing that's usher is telling him to do malacha. Telling him to do something permissible that has a psik resha problem is your problem as a Jew. It does not apply to a guy. It's a chiddush. It is a big chiddush. But as I say, Rav Moshe generalizes it, but he did not invent it. It's a Magen Avraham interpreting a Ramah that is interpreting a Truma suggestion.
So,
yep.
So then technically, if you don't tell
a
guy to turn on the light,
you
say flip the switch.
No, okay, that's very different. That is very different. Because flipping the switch is a meaningless activity except for the light. So you're really telling me to turn on the light. Opening and closing the refrigerator to get the food is a valuable independent activity.
Okay.
Yeah. Now this will bring me to the next question, because this is very important. Okay. Because I happen to have a guy, right, so I can get this stuff out. But if he closes the refrigerator, what if I need the food for the later meal? Let's say it's Friday night, right? I need the food for Shabbos morning. So, and the guy's not going to be around. So, what I'd like the guy to do is, hey, now that the refrigerator is open, can you unscrew the light bulb for me? Now, here, it's very, very important that you see that this is a totally different problem. Because, unlike the case where if I just ask him to open or close the door, that is a permissible activity, and the turning on the light is only a psik resha consequence. In this case, if I ask the guy to unscrew the bulb, assuming it's an incandescent bulb and you're extinguishing a fire, I am asking a guy directly to do a malacha, so that's going to be prohibited, right? So what can I do? So here, the poskim have the following idea. And here we have to look into the exceptions in the laws of asking a guy, meaning like this. You normally cannot ask a guy to do malacha, right? That's a given. But since that's only a rabbinic law, that's not a Torah law, the rabbis gave us certain leniencies. There are times that you can ask a guy to do. I don't mean hint. Unless I say hint, I mean directly, you can ask a guy. Now, one example, which may be relevant for either older people or young children, is if it's the winter, and either your heat is broken or the heat is not on, you would be allowed to tell a guy, not hint, tell a guy, turn on the heat, or even repair the heat, because as the Gemara says, Hakol Chaylin Eitzel Sina, people are all potentially sick if the weather is too cold, and you're allowed to tell a guy to do malacha in order to help someone who potentially is sick, even if it's not life-threatening, which takes us, we're not talking about life-threatening illness. Interesting machlokas, do we apply that to air conditioning? Very, very interesting question. For me, personally, I'm much more uncomfortable when it's hot than when it's cold. But my theory, which my wife argues, strongly disagrees, is, hey, if you're too cold, you know, just put on something. If you're too hot, what do? You're totally stuck. But be it as it may, this is a big machlokas. If you're in a sweltering, hot place, can you ask a guy to turn on the air conditioning? It seems that you should not ask a guy to turn on the air conditioning because although you're uncomfortable, you're not going to get sick. Cold weather will make you ill in a way that hot weather will not. Okay, but that's kind of one hedger. Another hedger is the following. Another hedger is... yeah.
If it's true or not, you can get sick from dehydration and...
Oh, okay, if it comes to that, yeah. I mean, that's really the judgment. And then we have special hetairim for shoals or places. Again, there's a whole longest one. Again, this deserves a share of its own. But one of the hetairim is that if the basic food you need for your Shabbos meal, the basic food, not the cake or the soda, but the basic meal, again, there's not even a description. What's a basic meal? But whatever, let's assume everything is in the refrigerator.
Yes.
Right. And the and you will not be able to have a Shabbos meal otherwise. So in such a situation, you can even ask a guy, not hint, you can even ask a guy to unscrew the bulb, provided though, this is an interesting point, but only because there's a supplementary lumbus here, that the unscrewing of the bulb is only a malacha d'rabbanan. Now, why is that so? Because even if turning on an incandescent bulb is an issur d'oraisa of havora, I think I had mentioned last week that extinguishing a light bulb is, although it's kibbuy, it is only kibbuy rabbinically. And the reason it's kibbuy rabbinically is that kibbuy under Torah law is only if you're making charcoal. And therefore, when I ask a guy to unscrew a light bulb, I am asking a guy to do a rabbinic malacha, which is normally prohibited, but it is mutter if necessary for the basic Shabbos meal. So in such a situation, if your basic meal is in the refrigerator, he could unscrew the light bulb. If, however, your basic meal is not in the refrigerator, it's only for luxury items, or and maybe this may destroy the hetzer, or you have neighbors that can give you the food and it's not a big deal, you would not be allowed. You could ask the guy to open and close the refrigerator, but you would not be allowed to ask him to unscrew the light bulb. So you see, these are subtleties that might not occur to a person, but this is very, very true. Now, let me mention, though, there is another alternative, and that is hinting to the guy, okay? In other words, until now I've been talking about telling the guy, asking the guy. So our chiluk that we've made is, if you're asking the guy to open and close, totally permitted. If you're asking the guy to unscrew the light bulb, it is only permitted if necessary for the basic Shabbos meal that you cannot get from someone else without embarrassment and the like. Okay. But this is talking about asking the guy. Okay? Now, there is a time-honored procedure called remiza, shelo b'derech tzivoy. Remiza shelo b'derech tzivoy means hinting without the use of a command or a request. Now, this is often misunderstood and misapplied. So I'm going to spend a minute or two of this. And that is the following. Most of the time, you actually cannot. People think as long as you hint to a guy, everything is permitted. For example, let me give you an example. My room is dark. I want to read. I cannot tell the guy, turn on the light. Everybody knows that. So instead, I say, you know, it's dark here, and Jews cannot turn on lights on Shabbos. And then the guy says, do you want me to turn on the light? And I say, you do what you want, but I cannot read. Well, that is hinting, but that's absolutely forbidden. And the reason it's forbidden is that even if you didn't ask the guy, if the guy did it for you, you are not allowed to benefit. Meaning, even if you didn't even hint, if he just turned on the light to do you a favor, you would not be allowed to read in that room. So, remiza b'derech tzivoy never helps if you're not allowed to even benefit from what he did. But, in cases where you're not really getting a positive benefit from what he did, he's just removing a negative impediment. See, that's the idea of the door. I cannot benefit if a guy cooked water for me, if a guy made food for me, even if I didn't ask him, if he did it for me, I cannot eat that food until after Shabbos. But if all the guy did was remove a blockage, that's not called benefiting. So I can't ask him, but that's where remiza helps. So for refrigerator door opening, remiza does help, in which I can just tell the guy, even for my ketchup or for my soda or for my pie, I can say, hey, you know, I can't open the refrigerator on Shabbos, and I'm kind of stuck. And then the guy makes the decision. Now, let me point out that this is exactly the way you gather everything in Hilchos Shabbos. There are machlokesim, especially in Eretz Yisrael, the machlokesim get magnified because Baruch Hashem, there are so many poskim here, so everyone has a slightly different nuance, but. Let's take a hotel, right? You have the magnetic keys, okay? So for me to put a magnetic key in the door, number one, it turns on a light, although it's probably an LED, and number two, it closes a circuit and releases a lock, etc. So you have the problem of molid zerem, bona, and maybe havara. Okay, so I can't use the electric lock. Okay, am I allowed to ask? Directly ask the people in the hotel who are going. Well, of course, if they're Jews, you're in trouble. But let's assume they're goyim. If they're Jews, for sure you can't. But if they're goyim, could I ask a goy to let me in? So some poskim say you cannot directly ask a goy to let you in, because since inserting, it's not even like opening the refrigerator, because opening the refrigerator is an independent activity that doesn't in and of itself involve malacha. Here, opening the door is only through the completion of a circuit, so you wouldn't be able to ask the guy, but what you're allowed to do is remiza shelo b'derech tzivoy. In other words, you go up to the front desk or anybody and you say, you know, it's Shabbos and I'm not allowed to let myself into the room with an electronic key. And then the person says, do you want me to let you in? So you're not allowed to say yes. Your only answer is, hopefully the guy will understand. Well, you can keep on repeating yourself till he gets the hint. And the truth of the matter is, before Shabbos, you can give him a shir. You can give him a shir in the laws of Amira Lenachri. So this is remiza. But again, but the critical point I want you to understand is remiza b'derech tzivoy only works for malacha activities that are the removal of impediments. They do not work for malacha activities that give you actual tangible benefit, because you're not allowed to benefit. In fact,
can you explain the concept again, how that works?
Yeah, this is actually a very subtle concept, and that is, when you ask a guy to do something for you that will give you some new benefit, cook for me, carry for me, turn on the light for me, even if you're hinting, you didn't even ask him, you just hinted, you are not allowed to do that because you're not allowed to benefit from it. Even if I didn't ask the guy, a guy turned on a light for me, I'm not allowed to read in that room. A guy cooked for me, I'm not allowed to eat the food. A guy boiled water for me, in fact, we'll discuss in a moment, how can you drink the hot water in a hotel? Now, the only thing is, halacha is mechalek between things that a guy does that give me benefits and thing that a guy does that simply remove negatives. So, when I am blocked from entering my hotel room by a door, the guy is simply removing a blockage. He is removing a barrier. Removal of barriers are not the same as positive benefit. So although I can't ask him to remove the barrier by malacha, I am permitted to hint. An example would be shutting off a light. This is a very curious distinction. I cannot hint to a guy to turn on a light, because if he turns it on for me, I cannot use that light. But I can hint to a guy, hint, to turn off a light, because basically it's not that the darkness gives me pleasure, it's the light is a mafria, the light is a difficulty. He is simply taking away a difficulty, so I am not disturbed. So, you still can't, and now remember, you can't ask it, but in such a case, you would be allowed to hint. So remisa b'derech tzivui does not work for quite a few things. This is a very common misconception. Yeah.
But so say my oven is on, the oven being on is getting in the way, is bothering me, it's getting in the way. So could he turn it off?
Well, it depends what you mean getting in the way. You have to be careful. If the idea is you're very hot, yeah, you would be allowed to not to ask. Remember, we're not
to hint.
To hint.
Getting in the way may be dangerous because the gas oven.
It might be. Yeah. It could be. In other words, if you want to remove a risk, of course, that might be mutter anyway. It's even asking buffet risk. But if you want to remove a source of discomfort, as opposed to getting something new. That would be where remisa b'derech tzivui works. Okay, so that's kind of how you deal with the refrigerator situation. So again, you can ask a guy to open and close no matter what, even if it's for ketchup. You can ask a guy to unscrew the light bulb if your basic Shabbos meal needs to be there, and the guy will not be there later, and you cannot get that from other people. And finally, even again for the ketchup, remiza b'derech tzivui, to unscrew the bulb would be permitted. Remiza shelo b'derech tzivui would be permitted.
Because the bulb is getting in the way.
That's correct. Because opening a refrigerator door is like opening a hotel door. Okay, now let me just mention that with new refrigerators, you have all sorts of problems, and I'm going to have to hold it over, but I just want to mention one fundamental machlokas, haposkim, and maybe this may depend on how you understand the Chazon Ish, although they're not entirely clear on this. That is, in the fancy schmancy things that we have now, and I'm not referring to digital readouts, those are obviously problematical. If there's a digital readout as soon as you open the door, of course that's a problem. But even in a refrigerator that doesn't seem to react, so to speak, meaning to say, it's like it seems to be the same thermostat, big deal, in which only after a while the motor gets activated. But the problem is, now that everything is based on sensors and digital reactions and the like, there's all sorts of internal circuitry that is going on and being activated in terms of, for example, how many times the door was open. There's a record being kept. So instead of being a pure thermostat, it may be a digital timer in which if it's open for 35 seconds or 40 seconds, you know, it gets activated. Now, this may be internal within the system. You're not talking about necessarily displays. You're simply talking about internal operations within, I don't know if they call it a hard drive, I don't know, whatever they call these various components within the appliance. So circuits are being opened and closed constantly, but there's no perceptible externalized effect in terms of what you see, in terms of what you sense, in terms of mechanical operations of the motor. So one of the big, big machloksen of the post-Gemar, whether we consider the internal circuitry, which is keeping records of things, but it's not perceptible. In other words, there's no readouts. Even if you looked at the thing, let's say you opened it, you wouldn't see anything. In other words, it's all literally inside of a black box. Do we consider the opening and closing of that type of circuitry to either be molid zerem or, like the Chazon Ish, a form of bona? Now again, maybe it depends on how we read the Chazon Ish. If the Chazon Ish was simply saying opening and closing of circuit is enough, maybe there'd be a problem. If, on the other hand, it is the conversion of the appliance into a functional unit, then this type of internalized gadgetry wouldn't necessarily count. So this is where there's going to be major, major differences. This is why you hear from B'nai Brak and other places, of course B'nai Brak is very sensitive to Chazon Ish's Shita, that you can't open anything, you can't do anything, because no matter what happens, even if the compressor is not activated and everything else, there's always stuff going on in the guts of the computer components. But many posts from Rav Asher Weiss, for example, very, very chashuva paisek in Yerushalayim, kind of says that based on the meta principle of meleches machsheves, that the Torah prohibits only the perceptible melech. Again, it's consistent with a lot of things. It's consistent with, you know, shiratzim, insects that are invisible to the naked eye, are not prohibited, because otherwise you couldn't breathe. A tefillin have to be square. Okay, but now sometimes if you take professional measurements, you can see they're not square, but halachically, if to the naked, the reasonable naked eye, they look square, that is halachically enough. So too, malacha has to involve some perceptible interaction with the outside environment, and totally self-contained internal circuitry, Rav Weiss says, would not be nichlal. But this is why there's going to be a big machlokes. We'll talk about it more, but I just wanted to alert you to this fundamental conceptual issue about the malachas. So according to that, many would say new refrigerators are the same as old refrigerators. Now, nothing particularly new. Other people are very concerned about the internal operations that are going on. Yeah.
How singing refrigerators?
Say again?
A singing refrigerator, if the door is open.
You know, those are big problems. Yeah, those are.
So I simply put in the thing, close the door, is that okay?
Yes. Well, did it start singing?
No.
Okay, so as long as you, you before Shabbos, you figure out your timing and just obey the timing rule.
And if it starts to sing, we stop singing and then you can do it?
Well, does it go on indefinitely? How long?
No, a few seconds.
All right, so you wait till it stops. You wait till it stops, yeah.
To complete the analogy,
yeah.
Can you ask a guy on Shabbat not to do something that you will benefit from? That should be okay.
Of course.
That's
of course, of course. The prohibition. Yeah, of course.
That
you can only. In fact, by the way, there's even an interesting shita. I think it's also a Magen Avraham, but I know Rav Shlomo Miller, Chashuv HaPosek in Toronto, says this. He says, you can ask a guy to do a malacha that's necessary because he messed up. In other words, an example would be the following. If your food is cooking, right, and the guy extinguished your oven, you are allowed, he said, you are allowed to tell the guy, turn it back on, because you are simply telling the guy to correct his mistake and restore you to the status quo that you were before he made a mistake. If a guy shut off a light on his own, Rev Miller Poskins, you can tell the guy to turn it on. Not hint, not even hint. Just tell him, so that we call the Chomer in your situation. You can certainly tell him not to turn it on, not to turn it on, or not to turn it off.
Not to turn it off.
But you can even tell him to turn it on if he turns it off.
They'll go around shutting off the lights, and you will directly benefit if he doesn't shut off the lights.
There's no possible basis that would be us. Okay. That's perfectly, perfectly fine, yeah.
About 30 years ago, months ago, Friday night.
Yeah.
December it was. The way the mikvah started to operate was there's a switch that someone would put on before Shabbos, and that would heat up the mikvah, heat up the generator, make the generators work, and the water would get warm and all that
right.
kind of stuff.
Right.
And that particular Friday night, there were about 20 women get to the mikvah, and the person responsible had forgotten to do it. Okay. So the mikvah was dark, so we were standing outside, freezing, and we didn't know what to do, and Rabbi Yaakov was still living in months, he was alive still. So they went to him and asked what to do. And this awful time, I can't tell you, I'll never forget that night.
Yeah.
And he said, wait until the shift by the nursing home next door. There was a half hour break between shifts. Right. He said, go and ask one of the shiksas there, bring her back to the mikvah.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't to say, gee, it's cold here, or gee, it's dark in here. You had to point out where that switch was.
Right. So he permitted asking him
to show her where the switch was and have her flip the switch, and then we had to wait till
it. That's very good. That's an example of what you're allowed to do for a mitzvah that is not just a private mitzvah, but a mitzvah for many, many people, a tzibur. And those are hetayr, meaning. The general rule is you cannot ask a guy to do malacha.
There's no other way to do that.
But for exceptional mitzvahs, they're going to be heterim. So every case has to be analyzed separately. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
In some of the examples you brought, I got very much with is that closing a circuit. For example, a hotel room, you put in a magnetic card.
Yeah.
I got very much whether you're closing any circuit.
So how does it work? What happens? How does the door get open?
It's like probably there's a magnetic thing and there's some type of, looks like a computer. But then the circuit is going all the time. Just